powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
Well, it wasn't all bad in yesterday's loss to the Raiders. It wasn't all good either. So let's talk about what went right, what went wrong, and how we can learn from this one with plays of the game. Here we go. Getting started on a good note. First play from scrimmage, Derek Carr, deep pass intended for Davante Adams. Well, Quandre Diggs has something to say.
Already on the first offensive play, the play fake, and Carr wants to throw, and he does. Across the middle, and it's intercepted. Diggs picks it off, 30, turns upfield, 25, 20, knocked out of bounds. He was trying to go with Carr to Davante Adams on a crossing route on the first play of the game. He missed Adams, but he hit Diggs right in the hands. Diggsy hits the ground, pops up. It's his first interception of the season, and he gets it down to the red zone. The Seahawks are in business on the very first play of the game.
A real strong quarterback safety connection there, Bob.
Way to start the game off. You got Davante Adams going on a little crossing pattern. Davante actually doesn't get his head around quick enough. It wasn't a horrible throw. Davante just wasn't looking. Diggs, right place, right time. Picks that thing up. Gets down the sideline. Hawks, 12 people on the field, but get away with it on that one.
I've always just said that Davante Adams doesn't have it. You know what I mean? He just doesn't have it. The Seahawks make him pay two plays later with this Ken Walker touchdown.
Hand off inside to Walker. Starts inside, bounces it out to the right. Down to the 10, down to the 5. He dives. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks. Two plays. The Seahawks are on the board from 12 yards out. The touchdown run by Ken Walker III. Walker now with his eighth rushing touchdown of the season. He has been a godsend for the Seahawks. As the Seahawks go up 6-0, looking for the seventh point from Jason Meyer.
All right, we're going to have plenty to say about Walker coming up in four-down territory, why he had a two-touchdown game that didn't feel exceptional, but at least in this play, Bump, what'd you see?
It felt good. He bounces it outside, man, makes a guy miss. He's supposed to hit the A-gap. Just shows his real power and explosiveness. Finishes the run in the end zone. At this point in time, you're thinking, all right, Hawks, we got a game. Let's go.
All right, Amir Abdullah, running back for the Raiders, also gets involved here. The Seahawks are taking Davante Adams out of it. And in this moment, they've also taken out a couple other receivers. But it doesn't matter because Derek Carr finds Abdullah for an 18-yard score on the next drive.
Abdullah in the backfield. Three receivers left side. Carr starts under center. Now he backs away. In the sunny portion of the field, takes a shotgun snap. Here comes the blitz. Carr has time. Looks. Going to throw on a wheel route, and it's going to be a touchdown to the Raiders. Amir Abdullah turned upfield. He got behind Diggs.
It felt like Josh Jacobs was running all over this team all day long, but important to note that they struggled a couple times against just running schemes in general, whether it was running plays. There was a great sweep that was like called back off some kind of penalty. I forget what it was on the Raiders, but they had a couple plays that Seattle just couldn't contain from their running backs.
Yeah, and this was one of them. They caught the Hawks in a safety rotation. Diggs is rolling down to the flat. He has the running back out the backfield. Nice little wheel route. Beautiful throw by Derek Carr. I think this is probably his best throw of the game.
Is that when Abdullah did like a roundhouse kick and almost hit Diggs in the face?
Uh-huh.
The crowd did not like that one. They were I can't believe Diggs just walked by without flinching at all.
I don't think he even saw it. I think he felt like the cleat on his shoulder.
That could have been bad, man. All right, and Diggs, speaking of, gets his second pick of the quarter.
Jacobs, the single setback. Play fake to him. Carr stands, throws down the middle. Ball's tipped. Ball's intercepted. Diggs again to the 45, to the 40. Run out of bounds on the far side in front of the Raiders bench. Ball was intended for Moreau. It was tipped up, and Diggs was right there. Diggsy has been waiting for a pick this season. He gets two of them in the first 15 minutes of play here against the Raiders, and the Seahawks are back in business.
Seahawks got a touchdown off of Diggs' first pick. They got a field goal off of his second. Both look really impressive.
Yeah, you hope to get seven here, but you still get some points. And big ups to Cody Bard, man. He was running with the tight end, tipped that football. Diggs, right place, right time. Good play.
We are into the second quarter, and I got to talk about this play. It's the flea flicker from the Raiders, and it ends up with a touchdown to Hollins. Hollins has absolutely no one around him. He can walk into the end zone, 20 yards of space on either side. What made this play work?
First and 10 at the 36 of the Hawks' eye backfield. Jacobs gets the handoff, little flea flicker, and it's going to be thrown. The ball is caught, and running across the field, Hollins all by himself, and he's going to score. Touchdown, Raiders. Terrific play call by the Raiders as they hand it to Jacobs, who starts up into the line, turns and flips it right back to the quarterback Carr. And Hollins, the other receiver, Mac Hollins, runs across the field from right to left. I mean, there was nobody within 25 yards of him. And from 36 yards out, the Raiders have tied the game and are looking to go ahead by a point.
Harold called it well executed after the game.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Yeah, you got Hollins on one side who's blocking like he's a tight end. You got Devontae up top. He jogs off the ball like it's a run play. Then, boom, he takes off. He pulls Tariq Woolen with him. I think they were in a zone, but because Tariq didn't feel any other pressure, he runs with them. Hollins uncovered, backers a bit down on the run across the field. Safeties are gone. Woolen's gone. Wide open touchdown.
So you get a wide open touchdown to Hollins, and the Raiders pull 1 point ahead. It's now Vegas 14, Seattle 13. Seattle's on the move. They pick up a first down, and then on first and 10.
And an offset backfield play fake. Geno steps up in the pocket, has time, throws down the middle, and intercepted. Down across the 40, into the 35-yard line. It's Perriman, the middle linebacker. That ball just missed its target and was picked off by Perriman. Denzel Perriman, the former Charger. And so the Raiders now are right back in the thick of things.
I haven't looked at any of the all 22, but it looked like just DK and Tyler ran into each other. I mean, what do you think happened there?
Perriman did a good job of dropping deep. Dropping to zone. It might have been a Tampa 2. I haven't looked at that specific play yet. And it also looked like Tyler Lockett stopped running. So who knows? If he runs, I still don't think it was probably the best decision by Geno to throw that football. But if he does keep running, maybe he plays defense and breaks it up. But Perriman, again, sometimes you just drop into your zone and do what you're supposed to do, and you get a gift. That's what happened.
And there, to your credit, that's what Carroll said post-game. He said, look, yeah, there were some miscommunication issues, but Geno probably shouldn't have thrown it anyways. Yeah. He probably should have recognized that there were miscommunication issues and that play wasn't going to work out. All right, well, the Raiders make him pay again. 30-yard touchdown run from Jacobs.
The Raiders have at the bottom line is first and 10 at the Seattle 30. I-backs, the toss to Jacobs, comes right side, breaks two tackles, stiff arms another, and he's gone. Seahawks miss three tackles, and Jacobs takes it into the end zone, and there are a lot of Raiders fans here, and you can hear him cheering in the background as Josh Jacobs just ran for 30 yards and a touchdown, and the Seahawks right now are stunned on their near sidelines.
Now, don't worry. The Seahawks are going to respond with a touchdown of their own on the next drive, but that did not feel good. You know you've got to stop the run. You've allowed nearly 100 rushing yards combined from Jacobs and their other back so far through this game, and meanwhile, you can't stop him. He's slipping and sliding through, guys. Stiff arms. Who was that? Al Woods?
Al Woods.
Stiff arms Al Woods, who's had a good season for Seattle, but they could not stop him. And, Bump, I think for a lot of Seahawks fans, they saw this and they thought, more of the same. I hate seeing the same mistakes over and over.
Yeah, it was. And I'm actually looking at this play right now. The Raiders did a good job getting bodies on bodies. All right, getting outside, allowing Josh Jacobs to find some space. And when you stiff arm Al Woods, man, you just got to say, hey, good for you. That man is over 300 pounds. And what hurt most about this was right after the pick. They wasted no time getting points.
Bump, we get it. Okay, you have an iPad. You watch film. Geno finds Tyler Lockett on the following play. Thank you from my fantasy team and also from Seahawks fans.
Shotgun formation again. Kind of the full house backfield. Here comes the blitz. Geno looks. Going to lay it up over the top. Got a man out there. It is Lockett. He has got it. Touchdown, Seahawks. An absolutely perfect rainbow pass that dropped right into the arms of number 16. His first catch today was worth the wait. A 35-yard touchdown strike from Geno Smith. The Seahawks have pulled to within 2, 21-19.
A beautiful pass and a beautiful response from Geno, who is now getting better at responding to bad moments. I will give him credit with that. However, in addition to that, I got to give credit to the receiver. Tyler Lockett is so patient with those passes, and he plays them so well. Doesn't hint that it's coming in, but he's still tracking it, adjusts his speed all the time. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, on that drive, they what, 7 for 75, mm-hmm. 7 players for 75 yards. They find Lockett, a 35-yard touchdown. He has a knack for accelerating when the football is in the air. I was talking to Paul Moyer about that. I go, look, he's like, he puts you to sleep, and then the football's in the air, he hits another gear. Another great throw and response by Geno. Mm-hmm. He goes 5 for 5 on that drive.
All right, we are through halftime into quarter three when Geno finds Lockett again, 28 yards on this one.
Walker slots on the right side here on first and 10. Empty backfield. Here comes the blitz. Geno gets rid of the ball, throws it over the middle. Lockett has the catch. Turns outside across the 45 midfield. Looks for some more running room up the sidelines and run out of bounds. Far side. Tyler Lockett has eyes. I think he's got about 6 of them. 2 in the front like most of the rest of us. And he juked Sam Webb about 9 ways to Sunday. They're still picking up laundry. And he found guys he could run away from and picked up 28 in the first half.
I'm going to keep it moving with this drive because we've got 3 subsequent plays, and then we're going to look at the drive as a whole. So after that 28-yarder to Tyler Lockett, there's an incomplete short middle to Lockett. Then he finds Marquise Goodwin for 21 yards.
Walker comes out of the backfield near side. Could throw inside. It's Grit Goodman. Makes the catch down inside the 15-yard line. Marquise Goodwin makes the catch. And now pushing and shoving once again by a couple of plays. It's great that history repeats itself. We still don't like the Raiders after all these years. We still push and shove. But a great 21-yard reception for a first down by Marquise Goodman.
Well, there's more pushing and shoving to come with this physical 14-yard touchdown run from Ken Walker. Touchdown number 2 on the day for the rookie.
Walker with the handoff over his left guard. Now straight upfield. Runs into 2 defenders. Still pushing. Still pushing. They are in. Touchdown, Seahawks. Wow, what a play by not only Ken Walker III, who just kept driving those legs, but his offensive linemen joined in, and they pushed for about the last 5 yards. A 14-yard run, his second of the day, and the Seahawks take the lead 26-24.
All right, so Bump, those 3 plays are the key to a very successful drive to start the third quarter. You got a 28-yarder to Lockett, a 21-yarder to Goodwin, who always manages to be there for those clutch moments, and then Ken Walker pushing himself into the end zone.
He had some help, too. I think Kobe Parkinson was helping
line.
Him. The O-line was helping him. Geno came in late and gave a little tap on the shoulder. But
I appreciate Geno. Just
you know, just a little nudge. But, no, that just shows the strength in this young man, the determination. Again, not a great day when it comes to yards, but he did put points on the board.
All right. Well, it wasn't a great day for the offense as a whole. You had a couple turnovers, one of them a fumble here by Geno, recovered by Chandler Jones.
Shotgun. Play fake. Ball's on the ground. And I think the Raiders recover. A mishandled ball, a play fake to Walker. And I'm not sure if he was supposed to take it or whether it was a play fake to throw the ball, as those two guys are talking about it as they walk off the field. But the defense has got to turn around now and stop the Raiders with a 27-all tie. 11:48 to play here in the game.
God, it's such a bummer because the Seahawks on that drive to open the fourth quarter had already gained 3 first downs. They were on the move. They were on a roll. They looked ready to respond. And that's how it felt all day, right? Like either it would be a back and forth shootout Bump, or it would be the Seahawks making advancement, making a good play, and then kind of shooting themselves in the foot.
Second week in a row, you feel like they're making a move to really take advantage of a good situation.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And you shoot yourself in the foot.
In the
2
red zone.
Fumbles. And you know, Geno said, look, I point the thumb, not the finger. So he owns that. And when there's problems with the mesh in the backfield, I always look at the quarterback and say, you know, you got to control that situation.
All right. Well, you can only contain Davante Adams for so long. There was a one-handed catch to keep the drive moving for the Raiders.
Second down and 10. Jacob stays in the backfield. Slot to the far side. Davante Adams is wide to the near side. Nickel defense for the Hawks. Carr looks this way. He's got Adams near side. Adams with a one-handed catch. Michael Jackson could not have been any closer to him on the play. But just a perfect throw by Carr. And, of course, Devontae Adams with one hand brings it in on the sidelines. A 28-yard gain. Unbelievable.
Carr to Moreau makes it a 34 tie. The game goes into overtime. Both teams get a drive. They stall, including a missed field goal by the Raiders. But finally, you have Josh Jacobs walking it off with an 86-yard touchdown. After this one, Bump, tell me what you saw.
First and 10 for the Raiders at their own 14. Adams is wide to the near side. He's got Tariq Woolen on him. Ibaks in the backfield behind Carr, who goes under center. The handoff to Jacobs straight ahead, and he's got running room. There he goes, and he's going to take off. He's going to win this football game. He's going to go the length of the field is Jacobs. 86 yards, and the Raiders are going to beat the Seahawks at Lumen Field on an 86-yard run from scrimmage.
Felt somehow fitting that that was how they ended it. I just hated seeing it, and you knew it.
Yeah.
I know you knew it.
I was watching from behind in the lounge area, and as soon as I saw him hit that gap and I saw the angle of the safety, I turned and walked away and put on the headphones and got ready for the postgame show because it was a wrap, man. And it's fitting, man. And sometimes you just get beat, man. And the Raiders beat this team. They ran the football through it just well enough, and it stings. And it hurt even more hearing all the Raiders fans. And
There's so many of them.
I contributed to that, too, because I gave my father-in-law tickets to the game. He's a Raider fan.
Bump.
He texts me.
Wow.
Thank you, mijo. It was a beautiful game. I go, Ramon, don't text me right now, dog. Don't text me.
Classic Ramon.
Text me after this one. All right. I know you guys have questions about the performance of the offensive line of Ken Walker, how defending the run game became a problem again. So, lo and behold, let's get to it with four down territory. Let's go.
This is four down territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, we're going to start with the offensive line here, Bump. What did you think of the O-line's performance against the Raiders?
This was the first time I looked at the O-line and I saw them just getting pushed back consistently. Yeah. I saw Austin Blythe struggle. Obviously, Abe Lucas struggled. He was sick. He decided to tough it out. And I saw that was during pass pro. And I also saw running the football, this guy shooting the gaps on the Raiders defensive line and getting into that backfield. We talked about Ken Walker not having the greatest day, only 26 yards on the ground. But a lot of the times I'm seeing guys in the backfield and Ken has to make a guy miss right now. The hardest thing to do as a running back is to get the ball in your gut and have to make a move immediately and not be able to press the gap that you're supposed to press. So Ken Walker didn't have the greatest game. But look at that offensive line, and they didn't have the greatest game either. Max Crosby is a monster. I mean, he only had 1.5 sacks, 1 tackle for loss, but he was disrupting.
What do you have, 5, 6 quarterback hits?
Yeah, and disrupting everything that we wanted to do. Yep. We've seen this O-line go against some talent. They saw another one this weekend with Max Crosby.
I didn't like it. Second down. We're going to stick on offense, talking about Ken Walker here. Are we seeing this rookie hit a rookie wall?
You know, I was actually asked this a couple of times. Like, what's going on with Ken Walker, man? Like, you know, the last couple games, he hasn't been able to get going. And I look at the Tampa Bay game, and I go, well, not too many opportunities in that game.
Turf was weird.
Yeah, turf was weird. You get down early, then you got to kind of change the game plan. I look at this, and I say, all right, what do you have? 14 carries, 26 yards. The offensive line didn't play well. And there are a couple times where I felt like he just needs to fall forward and take 2 to 3 yards. And that's going to be more effective than a -1 trying to make a big play. So I think it's not a wall, but this is just learning film, right? And he's going to be coached up just to take the 2 to 3 yards and fall forward sometimes. But the offensive line and Ken Walker are connected. If the offensive line is getting where they're supposed to be and Ken Walker isn't falling forward when he just needs a couple yards, this is the games you're going to have. So I don't see a rookie wall. Again, I'm going to call this the rookie hurdles. They're just learning. They're getting over stuff.
It's a good way to say it. I like it. All right, third down. Why is defending the run game become a problem again with the Seahawks defense?
Man, here's the thing. I'm sitting next to, again, Robert Turbin. I always lean on the guys that have done this for a while. Right?
Turbo was clowning Wazoo, by the way.
He was clowning, yeah. I had to get him, too. Utah State, y'all lost, too. So I don't know what he was talking about. But and the problem that the Hawks are having right now are stopping the gap schemes. And when you hear that word gap schemes, that means when you see a guard pull or a tackle pull and the guards and the centers are blocking down on guys. You're trying to hit a certain gap. That's why it's called a gap scheme. With a zone, you're pressing a gap, and then you're kind of filling your way through that thing. So with the gap schemes, they're struggling. And a lot of times it's because they're slanting. And I think the Raiders and the Bucks did a good job of doing this too, really predicting when the Hawks are going to slant in the opposite direction, right? They must have some type of data saying, all right, on third and something on this hash, when we see this formation, they're going to try to slant this way. So they're catching them at the right place at the right time. And with that gap scheme, you're getting bodies on guys, and the angles are crazy. When you do a zone type of scheme, it's like you're man-on-man, you're climbing to the next level, and you're letting your running back kind of feel what's going on. With the gap schemes, man, you're blocking down on dudes, you're double-teaming, and you're creating these huge gaps for these guys to run through. So that's what they're struggling with right now. So I'm interested to see how they make that adjustment next week.
When Carroll talks about fits, is that what he's implying too?
Yeah, fits. So when you're talking about fits on defense, it's gap integrity being where you're supposed to be, right? The AB and the C are always accounted for. Your edge rushes force everything in. Your linebackers have to back up the empty gap. So it's just about being where you're supposed to be, and you have a chance to do that. When you're getting dominated on gap schemes, you're getting pushed out of your gap. Now you put pressure on the guy behind you, and it's a domino effect.
I will also say Pete Carroll postgame was asked specifically about the guys up front, meaning those defensive tackles, and he made it clear that this is an entire defensive front problem. It's not just the defensive linemen.
It is.
The linebackers are a big part of that, too. We'll continue to talk about this all day long. Also, a reminder, we're opening up phone lines, taking your calls at 1. I know you guys have plenty to say following this game, too. Fourth down. Talk quarterbacks here. What did you want to see from Geno yesterday?
Man, I wanted to see my guy just win a game.
I know.
I wanted to see him have his signature moment and go down and win a football game. Now, the last two drives, I believe he was like 3 for 6 or something like that. Took a sack and also had a play called back on DK. First of all, can we talk about that reverse call on DK?
It was a catch.
And we're looking at the film. There's no angle for you to even dispute that thing.
Like, also, they took like 20 minutes to do it.
Yeah, they took forever to do it. The angle was horrible. That was a catch. I was disappointed there. Now, you can't just point at one play and say that's why they lost the game, right? It was a lot of things that happened. A lot of things that happened that put them in that situation. But I wanted Geno just to have his moment for him. You know, for the Hawks fans, for sure, for the Seahawks. But I feel like there are some things that he still needs to check off, and that would have been one of those moments right there. So I'm still waiting on that, and I think that he's still going to have opportunities to do that because, as we see with the Seahawks, nothing comes easy. You know, they're going to have tough games, and they're going to be close. So he'll have an opportunity, but I wanted that for him to have his signature game-winning drive moment.
Well, and there's a difference between saying, hey, I wanted it in this moment and didn't see it, and he can't do it.
Yeah.
Because what you're saying is the former. I wanted him to be able to drive down the field in overtime, must-win drive. Like, you have to score on this drive. I wanted him to be able to do it. You're not saying he can't. He hasn't had opportunities, except for that one moment when he didn't.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't work out. But the guys that you pay $35-plus million to usually find ways to get it done. So
Derek Carr has a bunch of game-winning drives.
Something tells me Geno will get a few more chances.
He will.
Yeah. All right, it's Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up in the timeline, the Seahawks made fans very happy with an announcement yesterday, one many of you have been waiting for. Also, some feel-good news, I think, from Commanders running back Brian Robinson, who went viral for all the right reasons. Not like charity, just something even better than that. Right, Curtis?
That was incredible.
It's incredible. That's coming up next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. A couple of you saw this one on your timeline yesterday. The Seahawks, in our first story, have officially announced that they will be wearing their throwback alternates for the 2023 season. It's finally here. I see questions about when the Seahawks are going to do their alternate unis or throwback unis all the time. And the answer is finally next season.
It's about dang time.
I know.
And they better do it right. They better have the throwbacks with, like, the modern type shine to it. You know what I'm saying?
Silver helmet.
Yeah. If you don't have a silver helmet, so help me God.
Yeah, that's going to be dope, though. I think when they pull those jerseys out, they'll be the best uniforms in the league. You know what jerseys I kind of like, too, man? And I'm mad that I like it is the Commanders All Blacks.
Oh, no, they're good.
Those are clean.
Did you guys see the Commanders
The tribute to Sean Taylor?
The Sean Taylor tribute?
I mean, we might as well put that on the timeline.
I'm going to go ahead and add it to the timeline right now.
I got to pull it
up. Let me tell you about it. So you Google it, or anyone if you're at work, Google Commanders tribute Sean Taylor, and I will tell you what it is. The Commanders announced that they were doing this tribute to Sean Taylor, and there was also going to be, Curtis, correct, like an athletic line? Like there was going to be part of like a
Commanders line that I think his daughter had sort of like procured.
I'm not entirely sure. It was somehow connected with a line of merchandise. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the outcome of what I'm going to say makes sense with that being said. But when you say that you're going to have a memorial and a tribute to Sean Taylor and there's going to be this huge reveal, people thought that there would be a statue for Taylor at the Commanders, stadium.
Yeah.
So there's this huge reveal.
They
drop a huge curtain from this big glass case. And inside the glass case is a mannequin. A mannequin wearing a Nike jersey, Reebok leggings, and Adidas soccer cleats. Who?
Who signed off on this?
Signed off on this. Not only that, but the mannequin... you wouldn't know it's a Sean Taylor dedicated thing outside of the jersey. None of the limbs are connected. It is truly, there are times when I think there's no other way. There's no worse way that this team can fumble the bag, and they find a way to do it.
Oh, I'm looking at it right now.
Do you know how often Curtis makes fun of me for wearing Nike sweaters with an Adidas hat?
All the time. You can't cross brand.
Regularly.
You know what the thing is with that? That's our generation. Like, the kids now will cross everything all up.
Well, yeah, because they're all about, I'm authentic.
Well, the thing is,
what are brands? I hate capitalism.
Is when Sean Taylor played, Nike was not the uniform supplier in the NFL. It was Reebok.
Yeah.
And so he never wore that Nike jersey.
Yes.
And I doubt he ever wore those Adidas soccer cleats out on the field. If you want to make it a true, authentic Sean Taylor, memorial or statue or whatever... He was known for taping his face mask in a very cool pattern.
Yeah,
that everybody tried to emulate at one point. Yeah,
Our league banned it.
Yeah, so that would have been a really fitting tribute, but they didn't do that at all.
So hold on, am I seeing a Nike jersey with Reebok pants and Adidas cleats?
Correct.
Yes. Goodness gracious!
And some people have said, "Oh, well, sometimes he played in soccer cleats," or they've tried to. The point is, a wire mannequin is not what people had in mind when you wanted to have a tribute to Sean Taylor's legacy. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it's less about cross branding. It's less about the soccer cleats, which apparently sometimes he wore.
And I wore soccer cleats.
Yeah. You did for football?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Are they just easier to grip?
Lighter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's more about the fact that people thought it would be a touching tribute and it felt
cheap.
That's a much more radio friendly version of what I was about to say.
Put the man in bronze, give him a statue.
Yes.
All
right, let's get to a lighter story here. Speaking of the Commanders, though, current Commanders running back Brian Robinson went viral for a really big hat that he wore during his post game press conference. And the best part about all of it is that he said, "My friend's got a big hat store. Let me know if you need a big hat," which is the best selling point.
Who needs a big hat?
Everyone. I do after seeing this. I need a big hat. Everyone needs a big hat.
Oversized hat. It's funny. No. It's funny because it's bigger than a normal hat.
That's exactly why it's funny. It's funny because it's bigger than a normal hat. This hat is huge. And I just like the pitch of, my friend's got an oversized hat store, so let me know if you need an oversized hat.
I researched the price that these hats are going for.
Yeah.
$125.
If we all chip in, though, if we each
get a giant one for the station,
each of us spend, what is that, divided by three?
It's like 40-something bucks.
That's nothing. That pays for itself.
This is the definition of putting your homies on. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Hey, my boy got a big hat.
I don't care how ridiculous this idea is.
I got you. Somebody added me about the big hat because I have a big head. I want to say to that person, you don't know me like that, homie. All right? You don't know me like that. Don't be coming for me.
Did they say, "Bump, finally a hat on your size"?
I think Michael Bumpus needs one of those. I'm like, dog.
Wow.
You don't know me like that.
Wow. That's amazing. I need a big hat to go with my big blazers all the time. All right. Next up here, we are going back to the Pac-12. After 12 years on the job, David Shaw stepped down as Stanford's head football coach on Saturday night. He went 2-1 in the Rose Bowl and had 5 double-digit win seasons with the Cardinal.
Yeah, this is surprising because I actually spoke to Shaw, what, a month ago, and nothing in the way he was preparing and talking about the present and the future made me believe that this was going to happen. But here's the reality of the situation. It is so hard to recruit to Stanford. One, you got to be extremely smart, all right? And two, there are no NIL deals for Stanford kids. And three, they just started letting athletes enroll early to kind of get ahead on things. Like the way that Stanford is handling athletics lets you know that athletics is secondary, right? And it's Stanford. It is secondary. That's the reality.
I mean, look at the
it.
Way the fans just
Yeah,
don't
the
show
fans
up.
Don't show up. I called the WSU Stanford game legit, maybe 3,000 fans there and like 10 people in the band. Like, no joke. So it's
even
it's
the band
tough.
Was like, we got to study.
Nah, we good. It's tough to win over there. So whoever takes his job, man, they have an uphill battle.
All right, next up here. Deion Sanders confirmed to the media that he's been offered the head coaching job at Colorado. Stick it in the Pac-12 for this one, too.
Man, if wherever Deion goes, he's going to be able to recruit.
Yes.
Wherever he goes, he will change that program. Like, there are people who are watching HBCU games now because of Deion Sanders. Game day went to HBCU game. Like, he is just, he can sit on anyone's couch. He can, it's all about charming your grandma, too, right? When you are being recruited, you got your family, the head coach comes over, you got your mom, your dad, grandparents are there in some cases. He's going to be able to charm whoever is sitting on that couch and make you believe that your son is going to a great situation. So wherever Deion Sanders ends up, watch, within 3 to 4 years, they're going to be talked about.
Last story here in the timeline, going to MLB for this one. And I wanted to end on a silver lining, just a feel-good story. The Astros just got better. Per Bob Nightingale, the Astros and first baseman / former 2020 AL MVP Jose Abreu are in agreement on a 3-year contract.
Of course.
I tricked you. It's
so
not
excited.
A feel-good story. I tricked
so
you.
So excited.
Yeah.
So excited.
This is the greatest thing.
So happy.
I'm really happy for you, Astros. Yes. Really happy for
no,
you.
No, seriously. It's just, I'm like smiling right now. I feel so great about this news. If you miss any part of the show, make sure you're subscribed to the Bump and Stacey podcast. The latest Seattle sports news is available right on your phone every single weekday. It's available wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. Please rate and review if you do subscribe. 5 stars if you wouldn't mind. Bump is a little more commanding.
5 stars, homie.
Yeah. 4 is fine for me too.
5 stars only.
Whatever you're comfortable with, that's like
only.
No worries.
5.
You can clown us
it.
In the review. I'm good with that.
Just give us the 5 stars. Five
if star. You give us 5 stars and then make fun of us in the review, I'll still read your review on air.
Of course.
I love those.
Still do it. All right, the Kraken are on a 5-game win streak, looking for win number 6 against the Sharks tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. Kraken right winger Daniel Sprong joins us next to talk about this win streak.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Sprong as his shot was blocked from the blue line. Sprong gets it back into the slot. Scores! Ding dong, Daniel Sprong!
Welcome back to the Bump and Stacy Show, and right now we are joined by winger Daniel Sprong. Daniel, how you doing?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
I am well, man. So I'm doing my research. I'm looking you up. And it says when you were 4 and 5 years old, you played up with 12-year-olds. Is that true?
Yeah.
Man, how do you think that helped your game?
Well, I think just the hockey back home wasn't that great. So I think, the age was a bit of a big difference. But hockey-wise, I think I was able to play. So. It was fine, but that's something what happens when it's from a country that hockey isn't the number one sport, right?
Daniel, you guys on your second 5-game win streak of the season right now. You guys have won 10 of 12, looking really good in that Pacific Division race. How much fun is it showing up to the rink right now?
Yeah, the vibe's great. We have a good group of guys, and I think we have guys stepping up every night, and it's a team effort, and we're humming pretty good. So it's been a good time.
Daniel, I'm kind of superstitious, right? When I'm playing golf and I put together like five good holes, I don't want to look at my scorecard. I don't want to talk about it. When you guys are on a run like this, do you talk about the win streak and trying to keep it going?
I don't think we really talk about it. I think we know we're playing well, and every game is a different challenge, and more than ever in L.A., so we're looking forward to that.
Daniel, you were traded to Seattle midseason last year, and ever since arriving, it looks like your numbers have seen an uptick in production. Does it feel like you've kind of been given the keys to the car a little bit more here in Seattle than in years past?
I feel really good. I think last year when I got traded here, I thought I had a good ending to the year, but I think this year it's been a little different, and I'm really enjoying it here, and that's one of the reasons why I came back, and as a team, we're off to a good start.
If someone were to talk to you who haven't seen you play or hasn't seen you play, how would you describe your game to them? What's the best part of your game?
I think I can shoot the puck pretty well. I think I'm pretty fast, good size, and I think have good offensive instincts, and I think that's pretty much my game. We can make plays as well.
Now, Daniel, you've got an interesting background, as my co-host Michael mentioned, born in the Netherlands, raised in Canada, though. We've got the World Cup going on. Which allegiance are you riding with here? I know Canada was eliminated in group play, but the Dutch are still riding strong. Who do you more root for?
There's only one team. That's the Orange Army, baby. we play at 7 tomorrow, so I'll be up watching.
Nice.
What's it like in the locker room with the World Cup going on? Because in a hockey locker room, I'm sure there's a ton of nationalities. Do you guys give each other a hard time based off of the results in the World Cup?
Oh, yeah, there's been a good amount of chatter. I think everyone's running their mouths a little who watches soccer or who's into it. I would say Bjorki's the only one that's kind of quiet about it with Denmark, but everyone else is pretty much running their mouths when they have the chance.
I love it. You've had a couple stops as a hockey player, and now you find yourself in the Northwest. Have you found like a favorite restaurant, something you like to do? How's the Northwest treating you?
Oh, it's good. I have found a couple of good restaurants. Forgot the name to one sushi spot, to be honest with you. But no, I love going there. But no, I've been enjoying Seattle, and the weather's been good so far this year. So not much rain yet. But no, I'm really happy here. And like I said, as a team, we're off to a good start.
Daniel, you guys are just rolling right now, as we mentioned. How much do you guys look back at last year and kind of look at this year's team and look at some differences? What do you think is the biggest difference between last year's squad, which had its fair share of ups and downs, mostly downs, and this year you guys have gotten off to such a tremendous start?
Yeah, I don't think it's really fair for me to compare last year to this year because I was only here for the last 15, 16 games of the year. But I think a lot of us were not happy with the way, of course, how we were losing last year at the end of the year. But I think we came in as a team, and we're playing as a team. And every night there's different guys stepping up, and we're doing it the right way. So we just have to continue going there and keep playing our game.
Talking to Daniel Sprung, the winger for the Seattle Kraken. Daniel, you're a young guy, 25 years old, but you got some youngsters on your team, man. You had a 20-year-old and an 18-year-old. How do you feel like Shane White and Manny Beniers are coming along?
Yeah, they're it's been two. Like we said, we have a really good group of guys. I don't think the age really matters on with our team, and they're two great guys. And Matty got to know a bit last year and hung out with him during the summer when he came to Montreal. But he's doing great. He's a great kid, but same thing with Ryder, and looking forward to continuing the season with those guys.
You spent some time with the Ducks organization a couple of years ago. How did it feel to get the game-winning goal last night against one of your former teams?
Yeah, I felt good. That game was definitely circled on the calendar, and felt good to walk out with a win.
Now, you guys are riding high in your second five-game win streak, but you know how sports goes, right? There's always something to work on, always something to get better at. If there was another step you felt like your team needs to take, what would that be?
I think we just want to continue playing better every night. I think last game we had spurts where we sank down to their pace or their style of play, but I think good teams find a way to win games, and we did that last night, and I'm sure we want to clean up a couple things, so we'll make sure we're ready to go for Tuesday.
Daniel, you guys have really been putting the puck in the net this season at such a high clip. What do you attribute that uptick in offensive production to this season?
Yeah, we have four lines that can roll, and I think every night there's a different line stepping up or multiple lines stepping up, and when that happens in the team, you know, goals are going to happen, and that's what we're doing as a team, and it's been our success, and we all love each other, and we just want each other to win games, and you can see that.
All right, Daniel, well, we appreciate your time. We love watching you guys do your thing, and hopefully we talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, Daniel.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, again, the Kraken are going to play next tomorrow night against the Kings, right? 7:30 p.m. I keep thinking it's the Sharks. Against the Kings, 7:30 p.m. tomorrow night, looking for win number 6 in a row. Coming up next, a viral moment caught our eye from the Seahawks game. We got a couple more things from yesterday's game, though. Don't go anywhere.